Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite podcast, back for another week. My name's Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today as we talk about some of the players who need a transfer this summer and some potential landing spots for each of them. I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host, my friend across the water, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
It's always sunny in San Diego, Jack. I'm very happy. Obviously, just made this transfer myself, haven't I? New house that we finally got into last week. New phone, finally got the phone contract sorted. We'll talk about that later. New beginnings, yeah. New everything, basically, at the moment for me. But same old thing is covering transfers. So it's been a bit different to do it on a different time zone. It's actually quite fun doing it on a different time zone because when everybody else is asleep, you can kind of reflect on stuff that's already out there for the next day. You can get ahead on your messages that need to go out for the next day. And you also got the in-between hours to catch up on anything that you've missed. So yeah, it's going all right, mate. It's going quite well. And I'm excited about this episode that we've got lined up.
Yeah, I mean, the time difference does have some, you know, some positives attached to it, I think.
The 5 a.m. starts aren't always great, but yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that's not what I would be enjoying, but we are where we are and we've got loads to get through. So I think we're going to just get stuck into it. I'm going to throw some names at you. You're going to let me know what the situation is, and then we're going to work out some landing spots together. So let's start with Calvin Phillips, who is back at Manchester City and back in Manchester City pre-season training after that pretty disastrous half-season spell at West Ham United that took up the latter part of the last campaign. What's the situation with Phillips? Is he on the way out? Are City desperate to get rid of him? Or is this one of those where they still feel like there's some value in this?
Yeah, he hasn't got a future in this Man City team. There's no reason to believe that that's going to change. They're open-minded about what could happen in terms of him leaving. Don't think we're at a stage when you're ever going to get your money back on Calvin Phillips. And obviously it's an opportunity for other clubs to now try and make the most of that and try and get a deal. There have been reports actually the last couple of days around Calvin Phillips that he's kind of getting tired of the Premier League. That's what West Ham did to him, I think, on the back of what's happened at Man City. But I reported, I think it was last week, that Everton had real interest in trying to sign Calvin Phillips if the right sort of deal could open up. I believe that's still on the table, but they would probably want a loan. And at the moment, they're trying to do a few different types of loan deal. And they don't really have the space to do that because they've already got a loan deal in place. So yeah, it might be slightly tricky for him to get to Everton, but at the moment, that is the one that looks most likely. I mean, let's be honest, that's do or die for him in the Premier League. Because if you go to Everton and that doesn't work out, I think you're done. I think you're done. If you have another move like this that just doesn't work, it's not a good place to be. It's very strange. Obviously, Calvin Phillips, only 3 years since he was like a pivotal part of the England midfield. And, you know, people were loving Calvin Phillips and what he brought to a team and the partnerships that could be built around him. But we are at a point when he's seriously got to consider what is best for his career. I'm not sure that that's definitely Everton, but that's the one that's on the table right now.
It's funny, isn't it? Because obviously Amadou Onana's moved to Aston Villa. I've quite enjoyed the discourse around that because Everton fans don't seem too bothered that Amadou Onana has left to go to Villa. Villa fans are relatively excited. And I can understand why Everton fans feel like that. He's one of those players that everything seems to be right, but something has never quite clicked for me. You know, every time I've watched him, you'd be like, yeah, good. But I wasn't quite sure about the valuations being thrown around for Amadou Onana. Now, Villa have obviously paid that. Everton have taken it. That'll help, hopefully, in terms of getting their monetary things in order a little bit more, considering all of the chaos that's been going on around Everton. But it does feel that with them losing Onana and with Fulham losing João Palhinha, those are two systems or two places where a defensive midfielder in the mold of Calvin Phillips could potentially land. Now, Marco Silva has been running a rejuvenation clinic at the Cottage, as we know, for the last couple of years. And it has been quite impressive to see the way that he's turned around the careers that a lot of people thought were finished. The likes of Andreas Pereira, after you know that spell at Manchester United that never really worked out. The likes of Willian, everyone said he was finished after his spell at Arsenal and that disastrous return to Brazil as well. Watching those players kind of have that second wind under him makes me think that that's a potential, you know, mover at some point. But I think with Calvin Phillips, and it's interesting what you said about him potentially seeing his future elsewhere now, if I was him, I would be getting out of the Premier League, getting out of the glare, getting out of the spotlight and just finding somewhere where I could, you know, find a space to rebuild my career. Now, if City did think there was still value there, then a move to Girona, as we know, one of City's sister clubs, might not be the worst thing in the world. Now, obviously, there is Champions League focus there, so maybe it's not quite as out of the spotlight as some might imagine. But Alex Garcia was another player who has, you know, tipped to have a bright future at Manchester City, didn't work out for him there, had a bit of time bouncing around, eventually landed at Girona and has brought himself back into spotlight. One of the best midfielders in La Liga last year, earned that move to Bayer Leverkusen, who obviously reigning German champions. So it's been a good spot for someone to be able to rebuild and rebuild that reputation. The other place I thought might be quite interesting is Sporting, because obviously fellow Englishman Marcus Edwards went there and flourished. Obviously didn't go straight from the Premier League to Sporting, but ended up there after that spell at Vitória de Guimarães. And he has really kind of shone, and someone who's under consideration now for a big move to the Premier League, someone who Sporting are being like, well, the cost is high because he's been that good. Amorim has had a set of midfielders that's moved through. Obviously, spoke about Polina earlier, Mateusz Nunes, talking about Morten Hjulmand, who was someone in demand earlier this year, Morita. There's a whole host of midfielders who've come through under Amorim at Sporting and all improved, all worked really well in that system. And I just wonder if that could be the kind of destination in a system that's pretty set, pretty secure, and everyone seems to know what they're doing. They might just about get the best out of Calvin Phillips again, away from the spotlight it's had.
Yeah, I like it. The Girona shout is really interesting. I like the idea of that. Yeah, potentially would salvage his value as well for Man City if something like that could work out. So I totally see where you're coming from with that. And for Phillips, it would be a completely different challenge in a great city, a great way of life. And as you say, it is under the radar in terms of like English headlines and stuff. People aren't going to be watching Girona week after week, no matter how well they're playing over in England. So he said over here then, I'm not in England anymore, am I? But yeah, it's an interesting one. Something has to happen here. He has to leave. Like there is no scope for him to be playing for Manchester City next season as we sit here right now, unless they have a serious injury crisis in the coming weeks. So it's a good one to get the ball rolling, I think.
Yeah, he's a very interesting player, and it feels like an interesting situation. As you say, just one of those. Also, I think like fan expectation wouldn't be through the roof. See, last year felt like an outlier for Girona in some ways. So it's not like he's going to come in, and if they're not, you know, winning every single week, people are going to be going ballistic. Maybe the potential that you just need that little space to come out of things in a different kind of way. Let's flip onwards because we've got loads. And I wanted to talk about Quaveen Kelleher, who obviously had a good season, stepping in a lot for Alisson at Liverpool last year. Now, obviously, things have changed. Arne Slot's come in at Liverpool. This is no longer Jurgen Klopp's team. Once described as the best number two in world football, which I think was a pretty fair point. But he has spoken about the fact that he feels like he needs, at this point in his career, 25 years old now, to be playing regular first team football. And that seems to present an opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's in everyone's interest, really, that Kelleher would move on at this point. I don't think Liverpool are closed to the idea of him going by any stretch of the imagination. He's rated at about £25 million, but you might be able to negotiate around that. Obviously, your beloved Ireland would probably like him to be a number one somewhere rather than a number two.
Well, Heider Halgrimsson, who's the new Ireland manager, has apparently already told Quaveen Kelleher that he wants him to be a number one somewhere if he's going to nail down that number one jersey for Ireland in the upcoming future.
Well, there you go. he was obviously linked with Celtic early in the transfer window, but they ended up signing Kasper Schmeichel. But I think at this stage, Kelleher will be very open-minded about his opportunities. It was interesting the other day that he didn't actually play for Liverpool in their pre-season friendly against Preston. I have to admit, I haven't explored exactly why that was the case, but it did seem strange that he wouldn't play.
There wasn't an injury. So there was a couple of players that they came out afterwards and spoke about saying, you know, weren't available for injury. Kelleher wasn't one of them. So it is, I think, interesting at the very least.
There you go. So Liverpool not closed-minded about selling him. Kelleher needs more game time and he's not even playing in a pre-season against Preston. Irish manager wants him to go and be a number one somewhere. This is a guy that should have really no problem getting a move, but he's got like 6 weeks to sort it out and it's getting pretty urgent.
It's a strange one because I was going to come on to Aaron Ramsdale a little bit later, but actually it feels like we could probably put these in the same kind of category at this point, because another number two, a top level club who is not going to be playing, you know, number one minutes unless there's an injury crisis over the course of this season. And I think with Ramsdale and Kelleher both, actually, there felt like there was a market starting to open up for a goalkeeper of that caliber. And I'm not saying that they're exactly at the same level, considering Ramsdale has played far more Premier League minutes. But I do think there's similarities between their situations, which mean that these things are quite interesting. And Ramsdale, you know, himself has come out and said, I don't want to do another season like I had last year. That worked out for him in that he obviously was on the plane for the Euros and part of the squad, even if he didn't get any minutes. That's, you know, to be expected, given that Jordan Pickford is pretty much undisputed England number one. But I do think that there will be a sense that a year ago, there felt like a real market. Newcastle, obviously, with Nick Pope starting to get on a little bit and the injuries they suffered last year, felt like a real optimal destination for a goalkeeper. It felt like Nottingham Forest, who have a penchant for signing goalkeepers, were in this kind of category of being like, well, where are we going? What are we doing? What's next year look like? They've obviously changed tack on that and they have signed a goalkeeper in this window. So doesn't look like Forest are now going to be signing another goalkeeper. And you kind of go down the list in the Premier League, there's not loads of people looking for a first choice goalkeeper, which both of these would expect to be if they walked into a new club.
Yeah, that's true. If you were looking to have high profile goalkeeper moves, and Chelsea's probably about as big as you can get in the Premier League right now. Like, I don't think Maresca's been wholly convinced that he can go through an entire season with Robert Sanchez as his number one, as had kind of been planted as the briefing about a month ago from Chelsea that would be the case, when people have been talking about Sanchez being available for transfer, and suddenly there's a complete U-turn on that. It's like, no, he's got complete faith in him. And I think after perhaps learning a bit more about his team, he's like, oh, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe I need something else. But again, you'd only be competing to be number one. Ramsdale, I think, would be a slight step up on Robert Sanchez. I'm not saying Ramsdale is like the best goalkeeper you could possibly get to go into that situation, but I do think he'd be an upgrade on Sanchez.
I think if Chelsea signed Aaron Ramsdale, who would be coming in to be number one, you would expect him to start the season between the sticks for Chelsea and, barring major incident, to remain there for most of the season. Now, all of this is a little bit harsh on Georgi Petrovic, who I actually thought was pretty good for the majority of the back half of last season and a little bit of a safer pair of hands than Chelsea have had in a little while. But also, Chelsea have, what, four keepers on the books now? Because obviously Petrovic is there, Sanchez is there, Kepa's come back. We'll talk about him later. You know, they're going to need to shift things on as well before they make any signings in these kind of departments. And when the briefings about someone like Ramsdale have been thrown around, Chelsea have kind of made it clear that he's not particularly of interest to them right now, which is interesting as well.
He's probably too old. We've seen the sort of profiles that Chelsea go for. They're probably looking for a 14, 13-year-old to come in and start vying for the goalkeeper position, such as their youth policy these days. But this is a position you really can't mess around in. And, you know, we can joke about, you know, the model that they've got there at Chelsea now, and so much focus on worrying about the next generation when they haven't figured out of having players of this generation that are actually going to help them get back to where they need to be. I mean, it's a story for another day, but if I was a Chelsea fan, I'd be extremely concerned about what you're actually going to get out of this team in the coming months, because there's no signs for me that that team is going to be any better than last season and might actually end up being worse. So let's wait and see. But yeah, I think Ramsdale would be a good signing for Chelsea. Kelleher, I don't think would be in Chelsea's thinking. I think a team in maybe a middling Premier League team is probably where he could hope to be if he even stays in England.
So there are links that Saudi Arabian clubs are interested in Alphonse Areola as kind of a cut price alternative to Ederson, who's been talked about with a potential move for a little while now. And I think that's interesting because if Areola was to go, I think that West Ham jersey might be quite an optimal one for one of these two. And I've linked Kelleher to Brentford for ages. And I like Mark Flecken, and I thought he did turn it around towards the end of last season. But I don't think the Brentford fans are convinced completely that he is the man for that job. 31 years old now. To bring in someone like Kelleher, you know, I think there would be a major potential for a profit flip from a Brentford perspective, even if he does cost 25 million, because I think he's a wonderful keeper, and an opportunity to get him set and settled behind an already quite settled back line. So West Ham and Brentford are the ones that really open up. West Ham, you know, might have a shot at Ramsdale as well. You expect that Brentford probably wouldn't do that. That doesn't make quite as much sense for them in terms of what it would cost, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also been kind of talk that Ramsdale might end up going out on loan to somewhere like Southampton, who do need a number one. Is that just an opportunity to kind of raise the value again, as, you know, where Ramsdale came from, what he cost? It would be an opportunity for someone to be like, well, we can maybe turn him to that price point again, where he probably isn't right now, despite the fact he hasn't really done anything wrong.
Yeah, exactly that. I'll be honest, I'd love to see Ramsdale go abroad if that was the case with him. And I think that for Kelleher, the same might apply. I think that Ireland would benefit too from that. If you're comparing these guys, Kelleher, well, the one thing, obviously he's had some great performances in the Liverpool shirt, but as an opponent, I would always have definite raised optimism. If you were ever going to face Liverpool, it was him in goal rather than Alisson. Now, obviously, it's not
that
many,
just speaks about how good Alisson
I was going to say, like, obviously, like, Alisson is one of the best goalkeepers in the world, so that goes without saying. But still, I think even a lower end Prem club or even an aside in an FA Cup tie or something would be like, okay, it's Kelleher. Let's go at him. And he's kind of got to overcome that, because at the moment, that's where he's pitched in football, and you've got to kind of elevate your status from there. And he's going to do that by playing first team football.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to another youngster. And actually, let's stay with Arsenal for a minute, because Eddie Nketiah is linked with a move away. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, at the moment, as we sit here recording, it's Marseille in the driving seat to do a deal for Eddie Nketiah. Obviously interesting that De Zerbi is completely ripping up that Marseille team, has no interest in pretty much what they had in place before he arrived, and is starting all over again. Mason Greenwood and Højbjerg, two big arrivals already, and Nketiah now being lined up as a potential to go in there too. He's known about this for the last couple of weeks, and as I'm told, has been getting pretty excited about the idea of going over there. You know, he's been linked with Premier League clubs, Fulham, West Ham, Crystal Palace, among them, but no one's really made anything formal of that interest. And that's probably because of the valuation around him from Arsenal. And I think at the moment, initial reporting around this was that a quick deal would happen, so much so that even by now, it sounded at first like this would be done. But one thing to consider is, like, they're not just going to do a cheap deal on Eddie Nketiah just because he's not going to be in their team next season. Think of Balogun, right? Like, Balogun left Arsenal to go and try a similar challenge last year when he moved to Monaco, and that was for £38 million. Now, Eddie Nketiah is better than Balogun. He has a better standing in the game than Balogun, and he's going to be worth more money than Balogun. Are Marseille going to go and spend £45 million on Nketiah? They're not. Right. Now all about working out the terms around that and figuring out what the best structure is to try to please everyone.
That might be a little bit different though, in that Balogun had proven experience in Ligue 1 and obviously went to Stadheim. And
you don't need proven experience in Ligue 1 when you've been at Arsenal.
100%. But Balogun had gone and shown it and proved it and done it. And that's why that cost so much, right? Like, 100%. I take your point. But, you know, when they bought him, they were like, we know exactly what we're getting here. How many 90 minutes have we seen Eddie Nketiah play over the last 3 years? Few, right? Like, you're not 100% sure what you're getting from a player, because there haven't been that many opportunities to watch him in full flight in a settled team. And I think that's interesting just in terms of how that differential might work in what these two cost. I don't mind this move, but I am starting to worry a little bit about that they might have too many players vying for the same positions, which might be the same problem. Obviously, they bought Faris Mbanya from Bode Glimt in January, who came in, I think he got 3 and 13. Now, Greenwood can play on the wing as much as through the middle, but he has spoken about his preference to play through the middle before. And Nketiah plays through the middle. Unless De Zerbi is thinking about playing a slightly different system, and I know he played two up top at times at Brighton last year, it is interesting to just see how that might work out, because that is going to be a fight for minutes once again, I think.
Mate, go and take on PSG with a front two like that. I think Nketiah and Greenwood as two of the, as an option at least to go with the front two, I think is quite exciting. I think that both of those guys have got so much to prove. Just taking on their talent alone and their goal scoring pedigree and potential from a young age, like those two could absolutely explode in that league. And that's what Marseille need here. Like, Ligue 1 is not the greatest league in Europe. We all know that, but it's still a decent league. But to have those, the guys that can make the difference like that in moments, that's how you start to push PSG. We've seen last season that PSG didn't have it all their own way. Obviously, they've still were fine, but you've got to give them something to think about. And the more goal scorers you have on the pitch, the more opportunity you've got to actually make a difference. I think Nketiah would be a great signing for them. And I just think that if he stays in the Premier League, the price will be even more difficult for teams, because I think that that's, you know, will Arsenal really want Nketiah going to a team that they're going to come up against? Probably not. And they're certainly not going to be as open to negotiating on the terms, whether that's a loan fee and the obligation that comes later on, whether that is the structure of the payment in terms of what you pay now, what you pay later. You know, these are the sorts of things that have been discussed in kind of the last 48 hours between Marseille and Arsenal. And Arsenal just have to like feel like they're getting some sort of value out of this. Don't forget, Eddie Nketiah is also on a big contract already at Arsenal. And that's another complication that comes into it all.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. If he was staying in the Premier League, I really do think the Southampton should be coming into this picture, in that they play with a style that has utilised that kind of striker in Adam Armstrong, someone who likes to get in behind, a kind of goal scorer poaching threat. And they've also just lost Che Adams, who signed for Torino in one of my favourite moves of the summer so far. So they feel like they're a little bit short on striking options down on the south coast. I wouldn't mind seeing that if that was an option. Although, looking at the option, if your options were Southampton and Marseille, I don't mean this with any disrespect to Southampton fans, because I think St Mary's is a wonderful stadium and a great city, and that support is great. But if you're going to go and have the option to play in front of those Marseille fans at the Velodrome, I think you take it. The opportunity is there. So it's an interesting one. If he does get that move to France, be one we'll be keeping an eye on. Right, last one for this segment before we take a quick break. Romelu Lukaku. This is one that's rumbled on, not just for this summer, but, you know, pushing on 3 years at this point. Basically, ever since he came back to Chelsea, the question has been, where's he going to go next? And he's had, you know, a brilliant spell at Inter. He had an interesting spell at Roma where he did all right, to be honest. I didn't think he was absolutely brilliant, but I thought he did fine for the most part. The name on everybody's lips feels like Napoli right now. And that reunion with Antonio Conte, that seems to hinge on the idea of Victor Osimhen leaving. Is there any other options here going on that might come into play?
Well, he's had three options coming out of the Euros, and he was either going to Turkey, he was going to Saudi Arabia, or he was going to Italy. And Italy was always really likely to be the priority and the preference for Romelu Lukaku. It's a league he knows he can thrive in. It's still one of the top leagues in the world. He's been quite settled in Italy, and I think he enjoys proving that he can do it at the different sides. So it's always made sense to me that Napoli would be the standout option for him. And I kind of hope it does work out for him. You know, it's probably going to take the knock-on effect of Osimhen finally leaving for it to happen, but that's going to happen anyway, so you might as well just get Lukaku in as soon as you can.
Well, I mean, I wonder if monetary flow is probably playing into account there. And you know what De Laurentiis is like with fees and making people pay up and make sure that that's all kind of done in advance. Everything about this makes sense to me. Now I was, you know, we're trying to find places and different ideas today for players to land, which might be a little bit more out of the box, but I couldn't really stray away from this one. I did like the idea of him linking back up with Mourinho at Fener. I thought that would have been fun, but Lukaku loves Conte. Conte loves Lukaku. He's clearly wanted to stay in mainland Europe and in the top five leagues, I think, when he turned down that Saudi money last year. The reset at Napoli means it's an opportunity to make yourself a hero. I think Kvaratskhelia will like playing with Lukaku. I can see that being a productive partnership. So I'm just hot on this one, and this would make me happy. So I want it to go through.
Yeah, I mean, you don't love Conte as Napoli manager, do you? But
no.
At least this would give you some hope that that things might not be as dire as perhaps you might predict things could become under Conte in terms of what you'd be watching. I mean, he's very effective and efficient for the type of football you'd probably be getting under him. And at least let's hope kind of for Napoli's sake, they do keep Kvara for now, because you still want that ingenuity to come through. And if they were to lose him, then that'd be a big blow. But to have his magic and Lukaku on the end of things, if you can get the proper version of Lukaku and not the one that gets disallowed goals and missed chances, then you're flying and you can actually at least be in that top four next season.
Kvara and Lukaku as the kind of Lautaro-Lukaku partnership at the top of a Conte 3-5-2 sounds very, very good to me. Right, after the break, we've got a load more players to discuss. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Loads more to get through. We're going to roll straight on onto some more players who need to move and their landing spots. And DJ, one of my favourite players in the world, Joao Felix, on the move once again, it looks like. When are we going to find him a new home?
Honestly, when can he just find a home? He's never had a home. Like, he's never feels like he's settled anywhere. It's like, yeah, it's like sofa surfing, but the football version. And he's just finding little clubs to stay at for like months at a time, and then off he goes. Sad.
The great nomad.
It's sad because this player shouldn't be doing this. He should be settled somewhere with a system built around him to become one of the best players in the world. Like, that's what we had in mind for this guy when he was breaking through. Now he's got opportunities at Atletico Madrid. Might still have opportunity at Barcelona. I think that they would ideally like him to just wait this out and see how things go. I don't think that's completely closed to him. But then you're getting Aston Villa linked, Benfica links. And he's really got a big decision to make here, because it really is time to settle for him. I mean, he's obviously a player that you really like, so I'm interested to hear what you think would get the best out of him. But this is a really, really important summer for João Felix.
I do quite like the Villa links, because the idea of him playing with Ollie Watkins, able to stretch over the top and him getting those pockets of space to operate in, is a nice idea. But equally, I kind of want Felix to go somewhere where he can become the main creative thrust. Everything goes through him. Back to Benfica, I also quite like. They've lost a lot of kind of important talent this year who were getting onwards, Angel Di Maria, Raf Silva, who were the creative hubs of this team. And there does feel like a little bit of a gap there still, someone who can play in that 10 shadow striker role. But the one I've been thinking about quite a lot is Milan. Now, Milan have obviously changed coaches this summer. Paolo Fonseca has come in. He did play a lot with a 4-2-3-1. In Lille and with that Lille side, sometimes slightly differently, but there was a kind of space for someone. Now, Milan have quite a lot of very talented wide players, but it doesn't feel like there's someone who naturally fits in that 10 spot if he is going to play with that out and out player. Would link him back up with someone like Morata. Now, maybe that's not quite why it worked or why it didn't work at Atleti, but there was senses that maybe could work as a partnership. I don't think they could afford him permanently, but I think there's a gap in terms of the central attacking player who they go through at Milan. And I wonder if a loan might work with some sort of option to buy on it, because that feels like the kind of club where Felix might just be able to rebuild his brand a little bit.
I'm seeing like the new version of Kaká here. Is this what we're thinking, Jack? Is it like...
It'd be very nice, wouldn't it?
That honestly is what jumps into my head at a moment when you start to talk like that, because that's the sort of thing that João Felix should be doing at this stage of the career, like being a Kaká type inspiration to a team. And and having the kind of notoriety that Kaká ended up building. And I don't think he should be avoiding comparisons to players like that either. I think he should be embracing the chance to go and become something like that. And we've seen that he's been quite brave in his transfers so far, João Félix. Yeah. Nothing really phases him, you know, whichever league it's in, whichever club it's at, he'll go and take it on with both hands because he knows he's that good and he has been his whole life. So that's the thing.
He was okay at Barcelona. I think this is the other thing. Like he didn't do badly there, but if they're going to sign Nico Williams, which looks likely at this point, if they can afford anybody, then they look a little bit stacked on the wings and they're not going to be playing with an out and out 10 because that's just not how Barcelona operates. So I don't know if there's a space for him there, if that Nico Williams deal goes through. And that's what would worry me if I was him and the whole, oh, I'm just going to wait and see kind of vibe. I'm like, go and find somewhere. I just feel like him and Milan shirt would be great vibes. And I would like to see him with that opportunity to go and deliver somewhere differently.
Yeah, that'd be lovely, mate. Like, I've got a soft spot for Milan anyway, obviously, like through particularly the years that we've been doing this podcast and I've been watching more and more Serie A again, like I used to in the old days. To see João Félix in a Milan shirt is something I'll be very much up for. At the moment, that doesn't really seem to be one of the options on the table for him. But you never know. We've still got a month or so to go where things will open up for him. I think ideally he'll want something sooner than that because he'll want to be prepared properly for a new season. But a lot of these clubs who are on the continent would prefer him to just wait things out rather than jump into something in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's probably fair. Villa might have that opportunity to build something, although I do think they'd be better signing Alex Baena to play in that role from Villarreal. So we'll see. We'll see how that one goes. Let's go back to the Premier League quickly. Ivan Toney. Now, I didn't think I'd be saying this, but I'm pretty sure Brentford want to get rid of him. I think they're like, okay, I'm done with this. Obviously, next season his contract runs out. They don't want him to walk for free. And I think that there does feel like a sense that having already bought his replacement in Igor Thiago, £30 million or so, I think they felt like the market was going to be stronger for Ivan Toney than it actually has been. Now he's increased his stock a little bit in terms of what he's done at the Euros, but it doesn't feel like the clubs who were interested in Toney at one point or some point aren't there anymore. Obviously, United have gone and signed Joshua Zirkzee. Arsenal don't look like they're in the market for a forward in that kind of capacity anymore, and Chelsea seem to have gone cold on this one. I think that Brentford are a little bit shocked, it feels like, from, you know, the reports you're reading and hearing, that this hasn't gone to the level that they expected it to.
Well, his stock was highest when he was banned from football, which is one of the most bizarre things I've ever experienced as a journalist. But that 60, 70, 80 million pound price tag that was put on him during that period has slowly started to come down, as I predicted it would. The problem is that nobody wants to pay more than £40 million for Ivan Toney. So that's quite a climb down from Brentford, where they were at one point when they were genuinely briefing people that they felt Ivan Toney was going to be an £80 million player coming into 2024. That was never really going to be the case, was it? Nobody was going to go and pitch up £80 million for Ivan Toney.
No, but someone probably might have paid £60
million. Possibly,
point,
in a different market, possibly. But we haven't really seen that level of spending and we haven't seen that need for a striker of Ivan Toney's type to go at that level at the moment. So I think that when you consider the options that are now available to him, that Tottenham should really be thinking about this one more carefully. Now, obviously, one of the things that precedes Toney is a reputation. It seems to be within the game that he's considered to be a bit of a difficult person to have in a dressing room. He might have a bit of an arrogance about him, a bit of an ego. That's kind of the reading that I've had from people when I've talked to them about why, for example, Arsenal aren't signing him. They say he's not a good character fit for the dressing room. I'm like, well, that's not good, is it? Like that means you see flaws in his personality and the ways that he could disrupt an otherwise harmonious dressing room. But then you see him on England duty and he's a bit part player who has actually become a little bit of a cult hero. Like he's, yeah, you know, his no-look pen obviously was good enough in the first place, but then the social media that came off the back of it with all the fun that they had around it showed that he's willing to have fun with it too. And I think that the fact that he accepted his role as a bit part player, I don't think that's necessarily true, but I think he was actually quite angry when he didn't get on until the final minutes of the group stages Obviously ended up playing more because it went to extra time and he got into the latter stages, but there was a possibility there that Ivan Toney was playing like 2 minutes or whatever it was of the Euros. And he wasn't happy with that, but you don't want him to be happy, do you?
And I think no, absolutely. And also, that's so fair enough. It's one of those ones where I've spoken about that kind of sense of self-belief, and arrogance is used as a negative word sometimes. He is arrogant, but in a way that I think a lot of teams would want. You know, he's like, yeah, give me the pressure. I want all of it. Let me do the things that I'm good at. And I think that there are plenty of teams, and I've spoken about Chelsea before needing this, especially in that number nine role, to be like, no, you want him to be like, no, it's me. And I think that Toney has that in spades. And I think it's a real interesting thing that this kind of idea follows him that I don't necessarily buy. I think that self-belief is why he's got to where he's got to. That's what I'm kind of looking at and thinking about at this point.
Yeah, I think Chelsea, we still keep in the conversation. They've had interest in him, so they might as well realise that and have it on the back burner. He does. I think there are candidates they would have ahead of him. Samuel Meridian, I think, will be one that they would prefer to bring in than Ivan Toney, for example. But the deeper you get into a transfer window, the less likely other deals start to look, the more likely Toney could start to look. And for Tottenham, it is still looking potentially viable that Richarlison ends up leaving Tottenham. And that means you do have to bring somebody else in. And there's been talk, obviously, around players like Santi Jimenez. There's been talk around Jonathan David. And these are all players that are genuinely on their list at Tottenham. But Ivan Toney is there too. And I think if they could get him for, well, in their eyes, under £40 million, but up to £40 million, let's say, I don't think that's a bad fit for Tottenham at all as like an alternate strike option.
Well, I think he'd walk in as number nine. And I think that, you know, part of the reason that people liked him in an England shirt was just a lot of the things that Harry Kane does really well. You know, the hold up play, the flick-ons, the different bits that get players into different spaces. I can see him having a good relationship with someone like Heung-Min Son, because there is that ability to run off him and get those wingers into dangerous positions. I quite like it as a fit, to be perfectly honest with you. He's not necessarily a traditional Postecoglou striker in that he doesn't play over the top too much in the way that someone like Kyogo did at Celtic. But I do think that there's a space at Tottenham for someone who is as good as Ivan Toney and as talented as Ivan Toney and who scores the goals that he does. I can see that working Postecoglou. Right, should we move on to Rafinha? We've talked about João Félix, you know, obviously not signing for Barcelona. This is slightly different in that Rafinha is obviously a Barcelona player, but it does feel like there is a sense now that he kind of has to leave in a way that he doesn't really want to, I don't think. And look, it's absolutely fair enough. The Rafinha has got to Barcelona and been like, no, I don't want to go anywhere else. I'm at Barcelona. Like, it's a pretty cool place to be playing football. But equally, Lamine Yamal is now, I think, the undisputed starter on that right-hand side. And whilst I don't want Barcelona to squeeze him like a tube of toothpaste that they did with Pedri and trying to wring every drop out of him at this age, there's also Ferran Torres who can play on that side. There's a talk about Nico Williams coming in on the other flank. I'm just starting to feel like Rafinha might be one of the only players that Barcelona could feasibly sell now that Ronald Araujo is out for the foreseeable future as well with an injury.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel sorry for Rafinha. It feels like from the moment he arrived at Barcelona, he's been so happy to be there, but must have felt like no one was convinced that he should be there. And that's really difficult, you know, in any walk of life to not feel like you belong somewhere. And he really, really wants to belong at Barcelona. It's just not going to happen, right? They've got bigger aspirations than Rafinha. They shouldn't have signed him in the first place. He should have gone elsewhere. But obviously he wanted to follow his dream. Dreams don't always work out the way you want them to. And now he's going to probably have to reconsider what the next step of his career will be. And the likelihood is that it will be the Premier League that opens up for him best, because that's where the finances are that are going to be able to open up new opportunities. He's obviously been there, he's done it. People can have a relative level of trust. It's just a case of who can and would actually go and sign him.
Well, I think Manchester United should be in this conversation. Mm. I mean, like, who says no apart from Leeds fans? And I completely respect that. But like, there is now a point where United look like they're trying to shift Antony on. And we've left Antony out of this conversation because honestly, I don't know where Antony goes. I don't know who puts that wages on their bill. Even if he gets out on loan, I have no idea. But it looks like United want to get him out of there for the, you know, for a short period at the very least. Now, whether they can do that with his agent being like, nope, he's not going anywhere, is a different question. But if they could move Antony on, you know, whether on loan or permanently, I think Rafinha would be a really sensible move to pick up on the right-hand side. Again, Premier League proven, as you're saying, someone who can create from that right-hand side, who looks to come inside on his left, has a little bit more in his locker, I think, than Antony in terms of what he can deliver, a little bit more creativity, a little bit more goal threat. I do think that if United were going to open something up, and especially with a young front line now, that is reliant on players performing to expectations pretty early on. You know, Garnacho, brilliant footballer, but probably best off the left. Talking about Højlund and Xerxes, who are both youngsters in here. Marcus Rashford, we don't know where he's going to play next year, but what that looks like. Part of me thinks that Rafinha would be a very, very sensible move for United, yeah, given what he's delivered already.
Yeah, look, not one that I've had many conversations with people around Man United this summer, and none of them refer to Rafinha coming in, but obviously if Antony was to leave, potentially Jadon Sancho leaves as well, so that's still possible. We've seen Mason Greenwood go. You never know. I mean, there's definitely worse options out there, and that would be a massive upgrade for Man United. As you say, Leeds fans would absolutely hate him for it, but stranger things have happened.
Went all right for the last geezer that crossed the divide, eh?
Well, who's that, Alan Smith?
Well, actually, I was going to say the last geezer, the first geezer, maybe, in Canada. But actually, I've forgotten all about Dan James, haven't I? So it's...
who knows? It actually hasn't worked out that well. But it'd be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what Rafinha decides to do, because it's a massive moment in his career.
That feels like the kind of move he might... I don't know what his affiliations and the understanding of that relationship between Leeds and Manchester United is like, but like, it feels like the kind of move that if it was touted, if you're leaving Barcelona to go somewhere else, feels like the kind of caliber of club that you might be like, okay, fair enough. That's a little bit different to some of the other things I was being offered. Let's talk about Weston McKennie, because it looks like Thiago Motta doesn't really want Weston McKennie in his plans for this Juventus side. Now, we've seen a lot of signings come in already. Obviously, Douglas Luiz is the main one, but Kefren Turam as well. That looks like a new midfield pairing that Juventus are going to utilize. Locatelli's there, Moretti's there as well, Fagioli is there, and they're continually linked with Teyon Koopmeiners from Atalanta as well. So when it comes to Weston McKennie, I feel like this is a really hard conversation to have, because actually in many ways, last year was about as good as it's been at Juventus for Weston McKennie. He led the club for assists for a long period of the year. He actually had a very, very decent year, having been pretty much on the verge of being bombed out ahead of last campaign. He came back in to become a really important player. His versatility, his work rate, he earned his spot back in for Allegri. Now, Motta not wanting him there is a completely separate point, but there should be so much interest for McKennie given what he delivered last year. And it just doesn't really seem to be there. And I feel a bit sorry for him in many ways.
I think he's got massive trust issues in any team, mate. I really do. And I think that it's in terms of consistency. I think his ability is kind of undoubted. And I like his personality as a player too. And sometimes I just feel like that's not backed up properly. And like, whether I'm watching him in club football, whether I'm watching him in international football, I just never feel like I truly know what I'm going to get from Weston McKennie. And that's perhaps a concern that resonates throughout the rest of football too. And obviously a couple of the moves that he's made haven't worked out. And I think that people would be nervous that this is a player that commands big fees, big terms, and comes with a level of expectation because of all that. And yeah, the fact that nobody else seems convinced by him is the problem that he's going to have in convincing somebody else that he's going to be the main man for them.
It's just a strange one, because I thought, you know, it's about as good as I've seen McKennie consistently over the back half of last year. He was consistent. He was sharp. And I appreciate, again, that his loan spell in the Premier League didn't go to plan and he wasn't great. And he obviously has high expectations of where he wants to be. And some of those comments have riled fans up the wrong way, et cetera, et cetera. I get it. I get all of it. But I do think that given what he put together last year for Juventus, especially having to fight his way back into the team full stop and then delivering, that there should be interest. I mean, if you're looking at Premier League, would he work in an Iraola all-action Bournemouth? Maybe. Linking him back up with Tyler Adams at club level might be a major benefit to whoever the next USMNT coach is. If Juventus signed 10 coat miners from Atalanta, who are they going to replace him with? They could do worse than this as an idea. But I do think maybe that my ideal place is to move back to the Bundesliga for Western. Could be a smart one. Look, I don't think Dortmund are going to pick up an ex-Schalke man, which is a shame because I actually do quite like Dortmund as a fit for him. And there's too many people in the way for him to be a starter at Leipzig. But I was thinking, what about an Eintracht Frankfurt? What about a Hoffenheim, who are obviously back in Europe? Now, these might not be the names that he was hoping to play
definitely
for.
Definitely not.
After being at Juventus. But they are, you know, especially Frankfurt, a European club with calibre, who have won the Europa League in recent years, who have played in the Champions League and the Europa League as well. He will be comfortable and, you know, in a place there where he's looking at, oh, I've played in the Bundesliga before. I've shone in the Bundesliga before. I think that a move back there, you know, even a Ralf Hasenhüttl managing Wolfsburg, I think could do a job in terms of rebuilding Weston McKennie up as a profile. So I do just think a Bundesliga move might be a sensible one for McKennie at this point, especially if the options don't open out in the way that perhaps he'd hoped.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, it's what's your ego going to allow? That's going to be the issue for him in terms of the teams that actually do want to sign him, because you're going to go back to being probably the big fish in the small pond. And in some ways, players do like that. But in other ways, you thought you were heading towards like winning titles and potentially like European titles. That's what Mr. McKennie joined Juventus for. And if he's going to go to somewhere like Hoffenheim, I'm not sure where the drive comes from. And I think that he needs that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Eintracht is a better option than Hoffenheim at this point. But hey, I mean, in terms of the style of football and what the fit looks like, I wouldn't hate it. Right, last one that I'm going to ask you. I have two to finish us off with. But last one I'm going to ask you is Kepa Arrizabalaga. How do you solve a problem like Kepa if you are Chelsea?
It's a massive problem, mate. I think I'm right in saying that Kepa is the highest paid goalkeeper in world football, which is obviously a big problem, because if he doesn't join Real Madrid, then what happens? Now, there is still talk and potential that comes through. The Lunin situation still looms. I don't know exactly how that's going to play out. I would argue that you just swap goalkeepers, get Lunin in at Stamford Bridge and send Kepa over to Real Madrid. I think that'd probably be a perfectly good outcome to the situation. Let Lunin thrash it out with Sanchez in that Chelsea conversation that we brought up earlier, and let Kepa go and be the guy for Real Madrid that he's already been in his showings there. But
back up for Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know, man. There's no obvious solution here because of the money that he commands. And Chelsea put themselves in that situation. So they don't really know what to do is the answer. They know that he's not going to be their goalkeeper. They don't know how to necessarily get out of the hole that they're in.
The question becomes, how much does he want to play, I think, rather than how much does he want to be paid? And obviously, the Real Madrid loan didn't go exactly to plan. That said, Carlo Ancelotti was full of praise for him as both a goalkeeper and a character.
Yay.
And the kind of vibe around Real Madrid was that they were very happy to have him around. And he was, you know, a good part of the squad. He didn't kick up a fuss when he wasn't playing, et cetera, et cetera. And I get all that. And I think that if Lunin does leave, then that makes plenty of sense. The thing is that Chelsea are trying to sign Villarreal's goalkeeper, Jorgensen. And if I was Kepa, I'd be like, well, send me there then. I'll go and rebuild my reputation in La Liga, in a league that obviously I've done well in before for Athletic Club. And I can go and be Villarreal's number one. They have a little bit of a goalkeeper shortage in that Pepe Reina's also left. If Jorgensen leaves as well, then they're going to be caught short. That would be an option then to be like, okay, you're going to go in as undisputed number one. And you're going to be able to be given a shot to rebuild your career over the course of a year, you'd imagine, right? That's not if you mess up in the first 3 weeks, you're going to be dropped. that's a deal that goes, okay, if you get that opportunity, then that might happen. Now, there is a link out of Betis at the moment for Rui Silva, who I think was going to be pretty much knocked on number one for this season. Adrian's gone back, but he's very much going to be, you know, an old head, I imagine, manning the bench. But there was talk of Rui Silva going back to Portugal. If that happens, I wonder if there's an opening there as well for another club that are in and around the European spots. Betis are a massive club in terms of, you know, what they represent, the fan base, et cetera, et cetera. They don't have the trophies to back it up, but in terms of the support, I think they're the fourth biggest club in Spain. You know, that is a big old stadium, a big old fan base, and a club who want to go and be in these conversations and are very regularly now in these European conversations in the hunt for trophies. Mm. That's an opportunity as far as I'm concerned. And I think that if, you know, he's in the market now to go out and be like, right, I need to go and rebuild that reputation, he should potentially be looking away from Real Madrid, much as it is obviously a very impressive and cool thing to be part of the Real Madrid setup.
Yeah, you're right about the Jorgensen thing, like Chelsea exploring that one. So perhaps that's where something could open up. But so far, doesn't seem to be one of the options seriously mooted. So there's a lot to think about there. Something's got to give. And as I say, Chelsea have got themselves in a real mess by throwing money at somebody. And I would suggest that that's not the last time they're going to have that problem.
Well, we've already talked about Lukaku, right, on this podcast. So it's very much not the last time. Just two quick ones from you from Bayer Leverkusen, because it looks like both of these strikers are on the way out, Sardar Azmoun and Adam Plotzek. I have suggestions in terms of both of them, in that Sardar Azmoun has just come back off that Roma loan spell. He didn't get that many opportunities given that Lukaku was obviously there and that was a bit of a complicated situation. Did okay when he was called upon, but I don't think there is a world where he becomes a key man in Xabi Alonso's side. So where's he going to get those opportunities to start? Another player really hyped as a youngster, and both of these were very, very highly touted youngsters who haven't really set the world on fire since making their kind of big move or first big move. But I think Sevilla is a good spot here. With En-Nesyri on the way out, Sevilla are in a place now where they're trying to rediscover themselves. There's a lot of squad churn going on there. I think he's versatile and talented enough to become a main man at Sevilla. So Sardar Azmoun to Sevilla is one that I really like. Adam Plotzek, Girona, Dovbik replacement. He needs somewhere there's opportunities. And just like I said about Calvin Phillips right at the start, and look, we're winding this round in the same way. The pressure's off a little bit because he has, Plotzek, really failed to find that solution since leaving Prague for Leverkusen. It just hasn't worked out. The talent hasn't gone away. The confidence firmly has. If not, I would quite like to see him play for a side that utilises a two up front, someone he could play off. So if Alex Baena was to leave Marcelino's Villarreal, they very much play with two up top. Playing someone like Plotzek off an Alexander Sorloth, I think could be a really interesting move. And I think would maybe get the best back out of him in a spot where the pressure's off a little bit. And also Leverkusen's change into, you know, maybe not a behemoth of German football, but very much expected to challenge at the top again this season, probably limits his opportunities in terms of what they're doing. So might be time for both of those to get out now at Leverkusen, even if one of those two is alone. Let's send Azmoun to Sevilla and let's send Plotzek to either Girona or Villarreal.
Yeah, I want him to go as Girona. I like that one as a Dovbik replacement. I think that's a great shout, mate. I don't have much information on either of the actual situations because they don't involve English teams, and that's what the core of my work is. But Plotzek is the one I'm actually most interested in there if those opportunities open up for him.
Yeah, I would like to see him playing some more football again because
definitely.
A very, very talented footballer. All right, let's leave part two there.
What a whirlwind.
Was quick, wasn't it?
Well, there's a lot of names we got through there. People's minds are going to be spinning as they're driving their cars or riding the bus or whatever they're doing right now.
Take a breather, take a nap if you need one. After the break, we've got the final segment and the latest installment of Dean's American Nightmare. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Dean, what have you got to tell us this week about your adventures across the water?
Mate, genuinely, people are messaging me saying, can you start this as like a spin-off podcast, like Dean's American Life? Forget this American life. That's old hat now, isn't it? Dean's American Life is what the world needs. So maybe on Patreon at some point, we start a couple of spin-offs of the the chaos that has ensued in the past few weeks as I try and sort my life out. But I do have updates, and I have some wisdom, actually, Jack, because...
Guru wisdom.
There they are. The wisdom is, when you need stuff sorting out, when you're having problems, I've discovered that you've got to go back to the old school way of thinking. You just got to go in and speak to people. The internet doesn't solve problems all the time. It's a great lazy way to try and do things. And I've tried my best, trust me, to get my life sorted on the internet. But I discovered on Saturday that sometimes there's nothing better than a face-to-face interaction. And in San Diego at the weekend, it was the Pride Parade. So we all bowl down the road and there's a huge parade, absolutely ridiculous. Went on for about 3 hours, people going down the middle of this parade.
Incredible.
It's incredible scenes. Boys had great fun. Everyone's having fun. It was really hot though. And we were pitched up in this spot where they could see and stuff, but right in front of an AT&T phone shop. And I kept glancing behind me as I'm getting hotter, thinking, one, there's probably air conditioning in there.
That's exactly what I thought you were going to say.
And two, they might be able to sort me out a phone. They're the ones that the other day I tried to get a phone contract and they accepted me, confirmed it all, and then 1 second later the order was cancelled. And it's probably because of my social security number not being recognised, or it's probably because I don't have an American bank account, or because Taylor's card didn't match my name. Whatever the reason, it makes sense that wouldn't work on the internet. I need to go in. So 2 seconds later, Tay says to me, why don't you just go into AT&T and sort out your phone? And I was like, I'm just thinking that, Tay. Great minds, good wisdom. So in we go, right? And lo and behold, half hour later, mate, I'm walking out with a brand new iPhone, new phone contract, AT&T forever. Cheering. Here we go.
Cheering. He's walking out going, come on.
It was, it felt so good. I mean, I'll be honest, it's not straightforward. I mean, the phone contract's not even in my name. It's in Taylor's at the moment. But I was able to get it sorted. And the guy's like, look, it's just complicated at the moment because you have no credit history in this country. And that you just got to get around it for now. And the best thing we can do is set it up in your wife's name. And then 3 months into the contract, you can actually start to check. You can just change the name. I was like, okay, that makes no sense as to why I could just change the name. But yeah, let's just do that. All I want is a phone number, mate, and to be able to use my phone, because the other ones, the battery's dead as well. I need a new handset. I don't even just need a phone contract at this point. I need a phone. So yeah, there we go. I went for an iPhone 14 in the end rather than a 15 because it was only $5 a month to get a brand new iPhone 14, which is a remarkably good deal. The phone contract's up and running. I feel like I've got a little bit of me back, mate. I feel like I've made a big step here. And I've also realized that when it comes to that bank account I need to get sorted, forget the internet. I need to go in and find someone and get them to sort it out for me. So that's my solution.
And take Taylor with you. That's the key.
Take Taylor with me everywhere I go. That's definitely been the key because she's been the person that has absolutely orchestrated every single thing that's happened out here so far. So that's also good advice. The next thing I also need to sort out this week is getting into watch your beloved Real Betis play against Man United, because that game happens next week. And tickets are ridiculous. I mean, starting price to get into a friendly between Man United and Real Betis is $65. That's absolute nonsense. No wonder the stadium at the moment looks half empty. Same applies for Arsenal v Man United coming up this weekend. At the moment, at least half the stadium unsold. Those tickets starting at $100. I'm not happy with this. I might have to become, who's the guy, the money-saving guy in England?
Martin Lewis.
Yeah. I'm going to be the Martin Lewis of soccer in the US. I'm going to be going like a... Oh, I'm going to go storming out the block to try and change this, because this ticket pricing for friendlies is just taking advantage of the fan. There's not even kids pricing. Like, to take Dylan to Man United v Real Betis friendly is going to cost me $65 for him.
Seems to be unfair, yeah.
So I need to find someone, go face-to-face and just say, this is not the price. The price is $30, so here it is. And I'm just going to hand them my money and walk in.
You're going to give them $30 and a tenner for for Dills and be like, there you go.
Honestly, tickets, please. Exactly, mate. Exactly. I'd even just having a chat with someone who I've just been Instagramming, who's just in the soccer community out here. And he's messaged me yesterday asking if I was going to that game. I was like, I do want to go and I probably will. But at the moment, I'm just not happy about paying that money. He goes, oh, well, check out this app because I got a good price. I got him for $60. I was like, that's not a good price, mate. Like, it might seem like it compared to everything else, but you're paying...
Compared to what it looked like before, yeah. Okay, fine.
But you're paying $60 to watch a pre-season friendly where they're probably going to rip up the team at halftime. Like, but the thing is, I've got a chance here to go and see Yoro. I've got a chance to see Rashford play and see how he's settling into the team. And I am very intrigued by all of this, and it's quite important as well for my job. Probably, mate, just do it on the business and write it off on taxes. So you might get to see a little bill go out soon where I just splashed $100, $150 or something kind of cut the tickets for me and deal. But don't worry, it's all in the name of business and Ranks FC.
Well, okay. How can you argue with something like that? At least you give me the heads up. I'm enjoying that you gave it to me live.
But,
you know, we've got there.
It's my first
the end,
mention so. On the air.
It's Johnny Cardoso. You get to go and see Johnny Cardoso playing for Betis. So that's
I've
a
never seen
to go.
Betis play in real life either, so I can start to understand what that's all about. Interesting to see too if there's any Betis fans in San Diego or in the stadium. Do you think it will be?
Well, it's a Spanish-speaking community, and the Andalusians did emigrate in droves in sort of the 1950s and 60s, which is why Hector Bellerin's family grew up in Barcelona, et cetera, et cetera, right. et cetera. And also, we talked about it earlier, why Betis have such a massive fan base in Spain, because a lot of them were the emigrant community that left Andalusia for work. So that's why they're so widely supported.
There we go.
There you go. So, there you go. A little bit of knowledge for you right at the end as well. And on that bombshell, I think we are going to call this a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for tuning in as ever. We hope you enjoyed this fly through a load of players who need a move and some landing spots for each of them. We've enjoyed putting this one together. There's loads more over on the Patreon, Dean's transfer show. I've got something talking about my favourite transfers coming up as well. And there's, of course, a post box looking back at some of the pre-season stuff, a few transfer bits on there, some international manager bits, loads to get our teeth stuck into. So that's already up on the Patreon. Link, as ever, is in the description. But for now, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you very shortly. Take it easy, Rank Squad. Peace.